This is Archive Atlanta, episode 259, Waffle House.
You're listening to Archive Atlanta, a history podcast where each week I'll be sharing a story about the people, places, and events that shape the history of the city of Atlanta. I'm your host, local tour guide, and total history nerd, Victoria Lemos.
Hey everyone, happy Friday. So this week we're talking about Waffle House. Opened in 1955 in Avondale Estates, we're covering the two men that started it, the first locations, franchising, expansions, lawsuits, legal issues, and even the Waffle House Index. I would be remiss not to start this episode talking about the stark difference between North and South in regards to 24-hour eating establishments. I come from the Northeast, the land of diners. Diner history is said to originate in 1872 when a man from Rhode Island fed workers from his horse-drawn carriage, basically the first food truck. And the idea was so popular that in 1893, the first patent for prefabricated diner cars was filed. The typical northern diner architectural style, even to this day, continues to be the stainless steel, railroad, or trolley car shaped, and the factories that produce these dining cars were concentrated in New Jersey, which is actually why that state is so connected to diner history. Southern diners are architecturally and culturally different. Diners of the Northeast originated because of industrialization and feeding those workers who often worked late night or overnight shifts. And as we know from history class, the South industrialized much later because of first, their dependence on slave labor, and second, their dependence on agriculture. So during the Depression, a lot of Southern workers migrated north for work, they experienced the traditional diner, and they actually brought back these negative connotations. So for the South, a diner became very much like a northern symbol. It symbolized the North, cities, industries, different ethnicities, and that was all just kind of like not what the South was about. But of course, the South had many places to eat. They were just a little bit different. So we're going to use the Tottle House as an example because this actually factors into Waffle House's history later. The Tottle House design was considered quote-unquote cozy cottage. Buildings were typically an exaggerated colonial-style dollhouse, very much looking like someone's home, oversized chimneys, manicured lawns, but the inside was a totally different story. So while the outside was very homey, the inside of a Tottle House had stainless steel kitchen, a very small counter, very little interior flourishes, and they also operated 24 hours. Now in the South, again, just industrializing later, this isn't really needed as much until World War II. So during the war, the war workers were working 24-hour shifts, and all of a sudden you had people that needed to eat at all hours of the day. So we got our basic diner history down, and now let's talk about people. Joe Rogers and Tom Faulkner. Joe Wilson Rogers Sr. was born in 1919 in Jackson, Tennessee. He graduated high school there, and in 1938, he was drafted into World War II. In the Army Air Corps, he flew B-24s, and he became a captain. In 1942, he married Ruth Elizabeth Jolly, and then post-war, Joe worked as a short-order cook at the Tottle House, and by 1949, he had been promoted to a regional manager and relocated to Atlanta. So it was here that he met Tom Faulkner, a realtor that sold him his home on Stratford Road in Avondale Estates. Tom Francis Faulkner was born in 1918 in Hawkinsville, Georgia, and his family moved to DeKalb County very early. His father, Ben Faulkner, served as general manager of the Avondale Estates development, and then in the 1930s, he started Ben S. Faulkner Realty Company. Tom went to Young Harris Junior College and then received a law degree from Woodrow Wilson College of Law. And he practiced law for a very short time, but he was really listed as a realtor in the family business even before being drafted into World War II in 1940. During the war, he was an intelligence officer for the Manhattan Project, and he trained at Camp Ritchie. And post-war, he came back home to Decatur and back into real estate. So it's the 1950s. Tom and Joe are living their best lives on the same street in Avondale Estates, and they come together with an idea. And as the founders often shared in later interviews, Rogers went to Faulkner and said, quote, "You build a restaurant and I'll show you how to run it," end quote. The two combined $4,000 in savings. I think like Tom Faulkner's brother or something built out the restaurant space, which was at 2719 East College Avenue, and they named it Waffle House because waffles were the most profitable menu item. The first help wanted ad ran in the newspaper on September 1st, 1955, asking for counter and grill personnel at the new Waffle House on College Avenue between Decatur and Avondale. Just a few days later, on Labor Day of 1955, same year that McDonald's was founded, Waffle House opened for business, and by the close of that year, the store had 10 employees and a sales volume of $50,000. Shout out to the DeKalb History Center for an extensive article on the first Waffle House locations, addresses, details. You would think that this topic is like really easy to research, and weirdly enough, it is not. Usually because like a lot of the Waffle House mentions in the paper are just like help wanted ads. And from its inception, and I think even until today, they are a very private company. They don't share things personally. So, you know, none of the founders had written an autobiography. No one has written a history book. So anyway, back to the DeKalb History Center. This is really where I got the following information, and they need to be credited for that. Waffle House number 2 opened in 1957 on the ground floor of the Southern Bell office located at 10th and Peachtree. In 1958, Waffle House number 3 opened in the Candler Glenwood Shopping Center, which is at 3198 Glenwood Road. The following year, Waffle House number 4 opened at an office building at 1244 Claremont Road in Decatur. And it is after this fourth location that the two men decide to offer franchise options. They build one more, so there's a fifth private, privately owned Waffle House. And these first five Waffle Houses are not at all what we think of today. They are not freestanding. They don't have the black and yellow signage. They're not the rectangles. These are inside shopping centers and office buildings. It's Waffle House number 6 where that starts to change. So in 1961, the first standalone Waffle House opened at 489 Moreland Avenue, built by a residential contractor who actually had bought his home in Avondale Estates from Tom Forkner. I think his name is Paul Schulte. And this design had an A-frame roof and a gray brick exterior. So still not into the shoebox design. That changes with the next Waffle House, which is Waffle House number 7, which opened in 1962 in East Point at 1674 Washington Street. So this is when we finally see the yellow and black color scheme and the shoebox design. And the shoebox design, often just called the rectangle, this is what allows the prep area behind the counter to really expand and offer more seating and more booths. The 1960s was a decade of expansion for Waffle House, with a separate franchising company that by 1967 grew the business to $3 million and 25 franchises across three states. A 1970 advertisement details what a franchise option would have looked like. That particular one, it was a Waffle House that was at 3685 North Crest Road in Atlanta. So it would cost you $80,000. You had to commit to a 15-year lease. I think it was three-year renewal options after that. And a guaranteed 10% return on your investment. And then Waffle House Corporate would cover all the maintenance, taxes, and insurance costs. Waffle House claims it was one of Atlanta's earliest restaurants to integrate or allow Black patrons, but I wasn't able to find articles or writing that confirm or deny that. When Dr. King was assassinated, though, in 1968, a lot of riots broke out across the country, and many Atlanta businesses closed in fear of similar rioting, but Waffle House did not, and they were apparently thanked later by Black leaders for staying open. Joe Rogers Jr. was the oldest of the four children to Joe Sr. and Ruth, and he was about 6 or 7 when his father opened the first Waffle House there, and Joe started working at that original Waffle House at the age of 14. He later graduated from Georgia Tech, and then he got his MBA at Harvard. In 1973, Waffle House had 168 stores in 12 states, 45 of those in Atlanta, and 70 were privately owned, with the rest franchised. It's that same year that Joe Jr. takes on the helm of the Waffle House, coming into a situation where there's two families owning this company, there is mounting debt, and they really only control 30% of their locations. He's only in his mid-20s, and he manages to consolidate ownership within the Rogers family. He ends the company's reliance on debt, and he creates an employee ownership plan. By 1976, the company was reporting $60 million in annual sales and 260 locations. By 1980, Georgia had 103 Waffle Houses, with 70 of those being in the metro Atlanta area. The 1980s also ushered in the first of many legal issues that the company would face. So in this one, the U.S. Department of Labor filed suit against the Waffle House for paying $212 a week to as little as $175 a week to managers who were also cooks. So for those wondering, adjusted for inflation, that it's about $730 to $600. But the issue here is that by calling the managers instead of cooks would have been paid hourly. They were able to kind of have less governmental restrictions about minimum wage, and they're basically paying these people less than what is required. After 2 years of legalities, a federal judge issued that Waffle House had not violated any laws and the lawsuit was closed. I think this led Joe Jr., though, to decide he wouldn't do interviews other than occasionally lecturing at Harvard, where they actually had an entire class on the Waffle House business model. He did not share private company information publicly. He did say in an interview in 1988 that the secret to success was to keep costs low, no frills inside the restaurant, and pay as low as possible. Each Waffle House location is open 24 hours daily, which has inspired the urban myth that Waffle House doors have no locks. They're also famous for a few different things. One of them is the jukebox. So a jukebox has been inside a Waffle House since its earliest days, but it's not until the 1980s that they take this one step further, and they create Waffle Records, producing their own songs. Jerry Buckner, who produced several of these first songs, alongside Joe Rogers Sr., said that if a song had made the cut, it'd be pressed into a vinyl 45 and then shipped to each Waffle House's jukebox. Since the 1980s, they've released over 40 original songs with titles like Waffle House Family Part 1, 844,739 Ways, which is referencing many ways to prepare a hamburger, a song called Special Lady, which is dedicated to the female employees, It's Waffle House Time, and Make Mine with Cheese. Now, there was a semi-recent article where somebody actually set out to visit Waffle Houses and see if they could find these original songs in the jukeboxes. And I think they actually found one and played it. But a company official refused to comment on whether they profit from these songs. And they said something like, we don't care if we profit. It's something we just feel strongly about. And we just kind of do it for fun, which I think is so fascinating. It wasn't until the early 1980s that they began offering toppings on their hash browns. So in 1984, customers could officially begin ordering their hash browns scattered and smothered, which is with onions, covered, which means with cheese, chunked with ham, diced, which is with tomatoes, peppered, which means with jalapenos, capped is mushrooms, topped is with chili, country is with sausage gravy, or you can go all the way, which means you get all eight toppings on one serving of hash browns. Another interesting tidbit, at every Waffle House, there is a small red tile surrounded by gray tiles on the floor in the open kitchen area, and that is where the server has to stand when they call out the order, and they call it the mark. I did not know this until I did this research, so that's the first thing I'm going to notice when I go to a Waffle House again. In 2007, Waffle House purchased the original Avondale Estates location back. I think they had sold it in the 70s, and they restored it as a private corporate museum. Now, while it doesn't have publicly open hours, you can email them and request to visit, and they will, coordinate a time and show you the space. In 2011, after the tornado in Missouri, then FEMA Administrator Craig Fugate coined what is now called the Waffle House Index. So because most Waffle Houses have backup generators, they often stay open during a crisis. They actually also have an internal team that will travel if there is a kind of natural disaster that will get the Waffle House back up and running. So he tells his FEMA workers, he's like, listen, if you're driving through the damage, you see a Waffle House and they have power and they're operating with their full menu, that's a green. Keep driving. You see a Waffle House, it's operating with a limited menu, maybe it's using a generator, that's a yellow. Keep driving. Then you pass a Waffle House that is closed, it has damage, or it's flooded, that is a red. This is the area where people need your help. Essentially, because if a Waffle House cannot reopen, it's apocalyptic. I added that part, but that's kind of what he's getting at, is that it's a way to assess how hard an area is hit by a natural disaster when the Waffle House cannot reopen. In 2019, there were more than 1,900 Waffle Houses across 25 states, 439 of those in Georgia, and 263 of them in Metro Atlanta. They've served 2 billion eggs and 1.8 orders of hash browns. According to the company, every 60 seconds, employees dish out 341 strips of bacon, 145 waffles, and 127 cups of coffee. In 2017, within weeks of each other, Joe Rogers Sr. and Tom Forkner died. Joe went first on March 3rd at the age of 97. Tom followed on April 27th at the age of 98. So there you have it, the story of the Waffle House. Thank you everyone for listening. Remember to leave a rating and or a review or listen to the podcast. There's also a Patreon link in the show notes if you want to support the work. I hope everyone has a great weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.